Hello to all Earth citizens and welcome to my Conscious Coaching Podcast. This is Dr. Kianush, founder and creative director of MCCG. My Conscious Coaching Group is a non-political, non-religious 501c3 coaching nonprofit with initiatives in healthcare, leadership, and education, with focus on emotional and spiritual intelligence. Our vision is to raise self and global awareness for a conscious mind through education and application of EQ and SQ, and our mission is to connect, collaborate, and partner with hospitals, academics, colleges, and medical schools and organizations to embrace growth, self-healing, and self-coaching to achieve well-being and peak performance of individuals and the team as a one connected whole. Our wonderful guest speaker today from the world of coaching is amazing Dr. Carol Kaufman. I know and have learned from Carol since 2010 when I joined my first IOC coaching conference in person and was fascinated with her fun, friendly, and honest and intelligent personality, and I still am. Just a little bit about her. She's a faculty at Harvard University, where she's the founder of the Institute of Coaching. In addition, she supervises an international fleet of leadership coaches and has created a coach approach training program with a global footprint. She has been named the number one leadership coach in the world by Marshall Goldsmith Group. Thinker 50 also shortlisted her as one of the top eight coaches for her contribution as a thought leader and coach. Carol's work has three main focuses. One is the leadership coaching, where she has worked closely with top leaders at Harvard, Cisco, Eggenzender, and AstraZeneca, and many more. And the second is her academic leadership, where Carol has profoundly impacted the profession of coaching on a global scale. While the faculty at Harvard for over 25 years, she received a $2 million gift from Harnish Foundation to be the founder of the Institute of Coaching. She is also a founding editor-in-chief of the first academic journal of a major publishing house coaching and international journal of theory, research, and practice. And the third is her coach approach training program for leaders at Mass General Hospital that won Harvard's inaugural program award for culture of excellence in mentoring. Well, Carol, thank you so much for making the time to be here with us today. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So let us know, Carol, what else do you like the world to know about you on the personal or professional level? This was your bio kind of, you know, thing.
Sure. Well, one thing for everybody to know that what you're talking about has taken place over 20 years. And when I hear my bio, it makes me tired. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's a lot of things. Yes, I think the thing I'd like people to know is that of everything I do, what I love the most is coaching and coaching leaders. The other thing is I just published my first book with Harvard Business Review called Real-Time Leadership, Find Your Winning Moves When the Stakes Are High. So I would love for people to take a look at it. It's actually the further away I get from the book, the more I like it. And it's helpful with sort of general mindsets and microbehaviors. So I'm very happy about that and have been enjoying talking with senior leadership teams about it. Last and certainly not least, I love to travel, particularly things around animals. I've gone on around 6 or 8 safaris at this point, just got back a week on the Amazon River. Mm. And I am married. My husband's a psychoanalyst, and I have 2 children who are now big. My son's 28 and a mechanical engineer, and my daughter is 30 and she's in HR.
Such a wonderful story and family, you know, and adventures. So just talking about your book, which mostly is our focus today and our conversation is coming from, your title is Real-Time Leadership. What is real time and what does leadership mean to you?
Okay, well, if I think about it, like all of us are facing a world that is crazed and there's like no extra time and we're like racing along. And, you know, what does that do to us? You know, so on one hand, the world is crazy, but real-time leadership can help you not be. You know, there's not enough time, but we can help you use it more wisely. And in terms of keeping your promises and your commitments, how to really be able to have clarity on what you need to do, what really matters, who you need to be, and how you need to relate to connect and work through other people. So real time is two things. So one, it is this moment. You know, what's the thing that's hitting me in this moment, the pivotal work I need to make. But it's also about your kind of life and career strategy. You know, so it can be real time, what you need to do this second. It can be real time, can be thinking about, okay, in 1 year, I want to be doing X, Y, Z. How can I pull that back, eventually getting to today?
I see. So I'm just curious, what led you to write this book, and who did you write it for?
Okay. I actually wrote it for my co-author, David Noble. Mm-hmm. We had been working together for about 8 years, working with a lot of CEOs and leadership teams. And we had gone through about 100 different frameworks. And his idea was, let's put all of these down and sort of get a sense of what will help people the most. So he comes from a background, he brings sort of business strategy and military strategy. David was the CEO of the first digital bank, managing director, managing partner at a couple of strategy firms. So we wrote it for many people. On one hand, it really is very useful if you're at the top of the house. And the other thing, though, it's very useful for coaches to know how to work at the top of the house and have these tools available. But it's actually very good for, I think, aspiring leaders. And the joke is on me, after the book was out of my clutches and I couldn't say anything more, I actually realized everything that we wrote applied to in the house as well as at the top of the house. It's a parenting book as well.
I love it, the way that you put it. It's definitely is a deep work, and you have made it easy to understand it very much. My favorite part is your MOVE model. So can you tell us a little bit about that, and how do you apply it to the senior leaders stepping into a big role?
Okay, well, that's about a half hour answer. So let me take it in parts, and then you can sort of tell me where you most want to go. Kind of the spiritual backbone of the book really comes from a quote from Viktor Frankl, who, as you know, survived 4 concentration camps in World War II. One of the pieces of wisdom he shares with us is that between every stimulus and response is a space. Stimulus being what's happening to you, the challenge you're facing, and then do you just go with your reflexes and your default approaches, or can you respond? So what he says is that between every stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our freedom. So the principles of real-time leadership, one, will help you make that space and then help you make the most of each moment. But it's also a guide on what to do in that space and how to kind of be the most successful human and worker that you can be. So the acronym in a nutshell is MOVE. M is to be mindfully alert, mindful as in centered and not judging, but alert like an athlete, you know, and really in charge of where your attention is focused. So that's mindful alert. O is to be an options generator, and that is in any situation to be able to come up with 4 sets of pathways forward. And that's called way power in addition to willpower. Then the V is to validate your vantage point, to understand if you were really able to see clearly, how would you know? And how could you help the people that work for you know? And then E is to engage and affect change on an individual, team, and organizational level. So M, mindfully alert, O, options generator, V, validate your vantage point, and E, engage and affect change.
Just, I was going over the book as well, and I reached to this map, the personal strength map in your book. Where does the leader should gain their strength from?
Okay, so I think what it is everyone needs to know their own fuel. You know, does their fuel come from, you know, action and success? Does it come from purpose and meaning, self-knowledge? Does it come from connections? And this is all based really on positive psychology. And a lot of it is connected to something called the Values in Action Signature Survey of Strengths, developed by a number of people, but Marty Seligman and Chris Peterson, in terms of sort of mapping the areas of strength, you know, the areas of the mind, of the heart, of the gut, of community, and of bravery. So I'd say in a nutshell, it's how do you learn that language of strengths? Because it's so easy to focus in on what's wrong with you. And we have a great articulate language for what is wrong with us, but we need to be able to be just as articulate and specific about our strengths and what gives us energy every day.
I understand. I mean, and the way that I see it in the book that you have mentioned is the strengths that of leaning in and the strengths when we are leaning back, and then the yeah. strengths of the leaning with and the strengths of not leaning. So these are the all kinds count as kind of strengths that you have mapped yeah. it in the book.
Let me explain that a little bit more. That's great. Yeah. That is part of being an options generator. And when you think of like your strengths, there's four reflexes. There's fight, flight, freeze, and befriend. And we translate these into the four stances. And so you think of a stance like a tennis player. If someone's serving and it goes to your forehand, you plant your legs one way. And if it's a backhand, another way. But what we then translate that into is just what you talked about. Is what is your stance? Do you want to lean in and actively engage? You can do that with edge. You can do that with enthusiasm. You can do that with a lot of energy, or you could do it with a lot of subtlety. But in this situation, do you need to lean in? The other option is to lean back, as you said, and that is go not towards action, but to thought, to really go to inquiry, being very rational, looking at the data, and really, you know, taking the overview. But the third one is to lean with, and that is being nurturant and an emphasis on connections, and also connecting to others as they want to be connected to, and also not lean at all. And that would be when something is thrown at you, having the capacity to not get triggered. So in this, so the mindfully alert, that's one way to make space, but to be able to choose your options is another way to make space. And then to appreciate what you need in each situation and what strengths are connected to each of those stances.
I see. And there is no order of it. So that which one has to go first? It can be any of
them. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Some people, So for example, like some people, they just, their default is to lean in. And so we would say to expand your repertoire, that's only one way forward. Can you also lean back? So if you're facing something and someone says, I want to do blah, 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 as a coach, but you can say, well, that's a really good plan. What would you do if you were going to lean in? And they spell it out. And then you could say, okay, if you were going to lean back, what would you do? What would you be thinking? If you're going to lean with and put people first, what would you do? And if you were going to be able to just not do anything and reflect and tolerate the silence, what would you do? And so you can think about that on an interpersonal level, but you could also think of it like on a business level, like you're doing a merger and acquisition. Do you lean in, get aggressive and go buy? Wait, do you lean back and do due diligence and really get all your ducks in a row? Do you lean with and think about culture and integration? Or do you not lean at all and maybe go, oh, maybe we shouldn't be moving forward at all? Let's not be hasty either way. But these are kind of four sets of ways to move forward.
Yeah, and it seems the way you say it, all four of them is necessary. And using that tennis
Exactly.
metaphor, that I love it, is just for winning a game or playing it well. You just don't have to have a good serve. You just have to have a forehand, backhand, and all other kind of, techniques and skills that you need to. And what advice overall do you give generally to the leaders about uncertainty?
I would say that one thing is how to see the simplicity in the chaos. But also, I was talking to a leader today, and they're about to make a big transition as the CEO is going to become the chair and the president's going to be the CEO. And meanwhile, the CEO's been away for 2 months, and really talking about uncertainty and this being in a transitional space is okay. How to make it safe enough so that you can help yourself think it through and trust your gut. But most of all, I think the enemy is feeling like you have to be the hero. You have to solve this on your own, as opposed to you need to be connecting with other people and have a vantage point on it that comes from many eyes, many people looking at it together. And the enemy really is ego. I think the issue with uncertainty is if you feel like you have to be the hero, if you have to be the one that's right, that is going to hurt you in ambiguous and uncertain situations.
Yeah, so it's a lot of pressure when you think about it for the leaders and as being lonely in this journey, as you mentioned, they have to do this all by themselves and to make it through. And as the leaders, what do you think makes us human? And I'm referring to the IOC paper, Leading with the Humanity, that I had the privilege to be part of it, in the writing team.
I have a funny anecdote. A friend of mine was teaching me how to use chat GBT, and we were working on a proposal, so we put the proposal into chat GBT and chat GBT 4.0, and we asked it what's most important in what are the most important 7 points in this proposal. And point number three was, I thought this was hilarious, be human-o-centric. So even ChatGPT knows you have to be human centric. And I think the core of it is people can be distracted by profit. And I think what we really do need to do is people really need to be at the heart of what you do and how you relate. And I think first of all, there's a number of really great papers in there and a lot of wisdom, but you really, it's a sort of no messing around. We have to put people in the center and never forget them because, it's a cliche that, people are your greatest asset, but it's actually true. And it's true on an individual, a team, and an organizational level. And I think one of the things the pandemic taught us in particular, and it was very hard for the CEOs, and they had to step into being basically the comforter in chief, as well as everything else. But the companies that could do that and put the people first did much better than those that tried to just barrel their way through. But I'd love to hear some of your perspectives on that, especially with your work as one of the authors of the whole white paper.
Yeah, exactly. As you mentioned, that's a big subject to talk about, but I know that the vulnerability and in the leaders, especially showing that their human part, it just has a lot of saying for the team members, and it create that bridge of trust. It create that bridge of the oneness between them. Talking about just the leadership is not just the management. It's also a journey of, to me, a journey of a spirituality as well, for the purpose and the meaning. And leading with humanity is bringing the meaning and purpose to what the leaders are doing, especially in the healthcare space, which is my attention, and passion. And going to that, since we are going getting closer to our end of our time, I just want to ask you how we can create, I mean, simply an impact by making a positive difference, by asking questions about from ourselves in each of every moment. How can we really apply, you know, the RTL in a practical way to our daily journey of leadership in any role that we are?
Okay, that's great. In a way, I talk about it as how can you change in no extra time?
Yeah.
So each one of these areas can translate into a split second question. So for example, the M, we talk about three dimensions of leadership. So you go into a meeting and literally you could say, okay, what do I really need to do? You may think it's make a decision. It could be you need to align the team, or the reverse. You think you need to align the team, but no, you have to make a decision. But to just take that extra second and say, what do I really need to do? And then the next dimension of leadership is who you are. And again, okay, who do I need to be right now in this meeting? And one CEO said she realized that she asked herself that every meeting. And she suddenly realized for one meeting that she didn't really feel like going to, that the least important meeting of her day was the most important of theirs. And then a very different her showed up. And then the third one under being mindful alert is how do I need to relate like right now? And how to then really go with the platinum rule, which is treat others as they would want to be treated, versus the golden rule, which is treat others as you would want to be treated. So for M, it's those three questions. For the options generator, it's just really like what you said. You just really go, what stance do I need? Do I need to lean in, lean back, lean with, or not lean at all? And to develop the other stances. V, to validate reality, is just literally, what am I missing? What am I seeing? Can I talk to somebody who may not agree with me, but it's just, is my vantage point correct? And how can I know it? And then for E, engage and effect change, it's like, what signals do I need to send out now in order to engage with people and have them understand our vision and our mission? How do I then co-create it and iterate it in terms of how other people are responding to it? So, you know, the book has like chapters on each one of these, but it translates into what are these questions that leaders can ask themselves, but also that coaches can ask the leaders that they're working with.
Yeah, and I also love all the summaries that is at the end of the chapter. And from all that we discussed, one of the sentence that you mentioned is really clicked on me, that what am I missing? What are we missing? And I think that's the question that we need to ask ourselves more often. And that will open and shine a light on so many things that we need to. And you shared so many answers with us today, Carol. I'm just so grateful for your presence to be here. And thank you very much again for your participation and contribution to our podcast.
Thank you. And one thing you don't know is Harvard Business Review is going to be publishing the workbook that goes along with this in September, this September.
Next wow, month. Wonderful. Congratulations. Yeah. So happy to hear that. Thank you for sharing the good news with us.
All right. Yeah. It's the first time I've said it out loud to people. So you're the very first to know.
Wonderful. That was such a gift in addition to your presence in our podcast. Thank you again, and lots of blessing on your way, Carol.
Oh, thank you. It was great to be here.
Have a wonderful day. Goodbye to our listeners. And remember, one podcast at a time. Thank you for being with us for another one. You can visit our website at myconscious.org to learn more about us, or write to us at coach@myconscious.org. And please stay connected by following us on our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, not to miss our upcoming episodes and events. Love and light from all of us to you. Make it a great day, everyone.